previously on The Crown, the world was obsessed with Prince William, and he was having a really tough time adjusting in college while also mourning the death of his mother. His father and his grandfather got involved and tried to get him going down that straight and narrow, and it was tough. None of that plays into this week's episode, but it's important to know where we were last week, right? So let's keep things going this week on the Lords of Grantham podcast. And after a nice little week off, we are back to The Crown with Season 6, Episode 6, Ruritania. What's going on, Corey?
I am so tired.
We took a big trip.
The closer it got, the more I realized it was a big trip. It was always planned to be like, well, I'll be on the West Coast for this one thing, and I'll just stick around for this other thing. I'll be on the West Coast. But the closer it got, the more I realized, oh, this is like 12 days I'll be gone for.
That's a long time.
And just got back last night and readjusting to East Coast time. And we're ready to rip on The Crown, you know? Ready to talk Ruritania.
What a engaging thing to jump back into. Post-Diana, pre-Kate Middleton, Crown episode.
I'm just glad it was a lean 48 minutes.
Oh, indeed. That's the one thing about The Crown is that, like, even at its heaviest lengthwise, at least season 5 and 6, you just, like, sit and you can just, like, watch. There's, like, two things going on. You're not afraid of missing anything. It's not like Belgravia, next chapter, where, like, you miss the guy pilfering wine if you look down at your phone for a split second. Right. This is a very linear show to its advantage.
Yeah. How are you doing, Dave? How's things been?
I'm here. I'm alive, you know? We put up our Downton Abbey fan fiction draft as a bonus episode last week as a way to entice people. Say, like this kind of content? Well, we got the fan fiction behind the paywall. So if you haven't listened to that because you're one of those people that's like main episodes only, I suggest you give it a listen because it's a fun couple minutes of basically picking a fantasy team of Downton characters.
And I know we were talking about it last week. Do we want to do Bridgerton season 2 ahead of season 3 coming forward? And you're kind of not enthusiastic about it. But today in our Lords of Grantham Lounge, they were saying they want to see us.
I should make this clear. If my tone wasn't clear, it's not that I'm not enthusiastic about going back into Bridgerton. I just think our timing is way off.
Yeah.
And I think in this world of so many period dramas, the fact that if we start Bridgerton season 2 in 5 weeks, because we're on season 6, so we have 4 more episodes of The Crown and then a breakdown, then we're like so far behind the ball, we're going to get to season 3 in like October. So, I mean, I know we're going to get there, but it's just one of those things. Batches.
We can do like, you know, episodes that cover episodes like episode 1 and 2. Yeah.
Maybe. I would just like to make that clear to our listeners. Any trepidation I have towards Bridgerton is not towards the show, it's towards the timeliness and our own shortcomings because we didn't tackle season 2 earlier.
We can also just skip season 2 and then come back around to
later. That's worse. No way.
Okay. All right.
But do we have any news in our shows before we get into this riveting episode of The Crown?
We do. We do indeed, actually. And it's actually related to The Crown. There was a report in The Sun this week saying that Netflix maybe wanted more of The Crown.
How? Go back in time?
Come on, man. Be enthusiastic about this. So apparently Netflix bosses, they saw the success of the Prince Andrew film that was recently on their service.
Wow. Scoop. We're going down that rabbit hole.
And so what the thought process is here that they want to bring back The Crown in a new form, which would be that there would be maybe individual installments, bite-sized helpings, if you will. So what the Prince Andrew film scoop on Netflix showed was that there was still interest in singular moments in time with the royals So if they can repeat the pattern by delivering prequels in a shorter form, they believe they may come up with a winning formula for a new incarnation of the crown. So instead of maybe seasons, we get like specials or maybe, you know,
movies,
a couple. Yeah. Yeah. Just about important moments with the royalty.
So, I take it. That would be fine.
Much more digestible. And it's easy to bring Peter Morgan in to do that if they want, because the guy just can't stop writing about royalty.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think that's a very reflective thing going into this week's episode, too, about the importance of royalty to the public.
Yeah. Dave, did you watch Scoop at all?
Did I watch what at all?
Scoop? The Prince Andrew movie that was on Netflix last month?
Oh, no, I did not.
Okay. Well, maybe that's something we could watch at some point in time if listeners want to hear us tune in and watch that.
Sure. Very much not in line with the stuff we've watched, but a royal drama is I like how this show started as like, we're guys watching period dramas. Now we're supposed to be like royal family nerds too.
Hey man, we're here for the
period. We're here for the fans. We're here for the fans.
And that, yes.
Also, I mean, the Met Gala was last night, and our boy Morgan Spector was there.
Oh, my God. He looked lavish. If you like the Gilded Age and you like people suiting up, you got to see Morgan. George Russell, a.k.a.
Do you think he was the only one there on purpose, or do you think there was some scheduling conflicts? Because Carrie Coon should have been there.
Well, so the way the Met Gala is organized is that it's the brands, the fashion labels that choose who their guests are to wear their fashion. So I assume he got invited and he said yes, and maybe others just said no.
I mean, it's so the fact that you didn't have Carrie Coon there with him when the whole season of The Crown was about establishing the Met and how the Met is a triumph, it does seem like kind of a ball being dropped in the zeitgeist, because next season, presumably, it's just going to be a set piece.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. They're supposed to start filming in July, so.
I heard that, aren't they already filming in Albany? Isn't that the rumor?
I think, well, that may be true. Carrie Coon said she's going to be filming her stuff at least in July, and she's currently shooting The White Lotus Season 3, it's unclear if maybe her role will be smaller this season, or they're just shooting around her coming.
Well, it is an ensemble, so they can just shoot all the on Ada stuff.
Yeah, could be. But yeah, we got The Crown to talk about this week, right? Raritania.
We do.
Dave, are you familiar with the term?
I'm not Raritania? Familiar with the term.
Well, it is a noun for a mythical romantic kingdom conceived as a setting for a failed fairy tale, costume drama, comic operetta, or the like.
So this is what her little dream in the beginning is Raritania.
Or you could say that's what The Crown is today. It's a mythical, fantastical thing that continues to exist. Who knows?
But we do start off with a dream.
Mm-hmm. She has a dream.
She has a dream where Tony Blair has taken her spot officially. He's King Tony.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's walking the streets. She hears them all singing, and we see him getting crowned. And she wakes up, and it's a nightmare. I was a little confused here at the beginning. I was like, wait, what's going on? Because the queen don't walk among people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, her worst fear is this guy becoming the king. And so this plays on some, rumors that among the prime minister she worked with, he was among her least favorite, Tony Blair.
Uh-huh.
And even here on the on the Western Front, I think we're aware as kids he was a sensation. He was the Bill Clinton comp for the UK. He was charismatic and he won everyone over.
Yeah, he was definitely a public figure, for sure. Mm-hmm. And the most celebrity since Thatcher, for sure.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where it's like, okay, we're aiming a bit high here, because Tony Blair is not going to be the king. Like, why would she actually be worrying that much about him becoming king? Like, it's all for dramatic effect, but it really does stretch, like, really now? Really? Do we believe the queen was this concerned about this man?
Well, I mean, I think at this point in time, she's had her self-esteem beaten so far down with the loss of Diana, right, and the paparazzi all over her grandson and just getting older.
And that's more of what it is just playing up the drama of how out of favor the royals are than her actually realistically fearing him becoming king, because he can't. He, based on how things are set up, it's just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, she is worried about his popularity, and especially, you know, she says they love him the way they used to see me. And so what better time than now to run a poll to see what the country thinks of them?
Yeah, and we have a little focus group bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that the majority of people in almost every poll they show, I think not almost, in every poll they show, think negatively of the royals.
Most damning of all was that only 10% agreed that the monarchy should continue. To which all of them were just booing in the room, you know, that they were not hearing it.
Yeah, Princess Margaret, right? She's the one that's like, who raise your hand if you think polls are dumb.
Yeah. And to be fair, a poll of 2,000 people ages 18 and up, you know, there's always 5% variance that comes with those.
So maybe 15% think the crown should stay as it is.
More or less, at best. And I think, what is it, the queen says, you know, you can't listen to the whims of marketing men, you know, when it comes to what to do with their popularity right now. But she knows things are not going right for them. They got to do some image refashioning. Get it right. But at the same time, Tony Blair is not worried about what the crown is up to. He's focused on Kosovo.
Yeah, he's worried about ending this war, getting people to pay attention to this war in Kosovo.
Yeah, and that was a huge crisis back in 1998, the Kosovo War. Because I remember them like drawing comparisons to being like a genocide, essentially.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, his big moment is to try and appeal to the U.S. to get them involved in there, because he knows once they get involved, it will hopefully lead to a swift end to the war.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not too different than what we're, as far as public perception, as what we're dealing with in Israel right now. Not to dive into politics, but as someone who was 10 during the Kosovo War, I have very little memory of this happening in real time. But, you know, you see that it's this sort of obvious humane issue that Tony Blair is saying, like, just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not happening. It's happening on our continent. We need to do something about it.
Yeah,
and Clinton is saying, you know, people don't see any connection to send our troops over to die.
I'm a little busy right now. I got the stain. Not going to do it, Tony. I ain't going to do it.
But he keeps calling him. Tony keeps calling him his friend. He's like, my man, Bill. Yeah. My friend, Bill.
I mean, what was it? There was that movie, The Special Relationship, with Michael Sheen as Tony Blair yet again, and I believe it was written by Peter Morgan. It was written by Peter Morgan, and it's about their friendship.
Who plays Clinton? Daryl Hammond?
Dennis Quaid.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gone that way.
They dyed his hair. But it is funny, because even that movie, it kind of gets at what I feel with this episode is maybe one of its drawbacks, is I feel like Peter Morgan is a little tired of writing about Tony Blair. Because the man has written about him in The Queen, the special relationship that I just mentioned. There was also a 2003 TV movie, The Deal, that he made. There was also the play,
in 2003? That's very close to the events. Well, I mean, so is The Queen.
Yeah, exactly. He wrote The Audience about the Queen's interactions with her prime ministers. So that also, it didn't start with Tony Blair, but eventually included the Tony Blair. The guy has written a lot about the man. And so he kind of yada yadas, I feel like, Tony Blair's significance in this episode, where he's just like, yeah, he's just running things. People just hang off every word he says. And I guess the Kosovo example is like the thing to drive home how much power this guy had. But again, true to Peter Morgan fashion, he changes history, where the U.S. was already doing air missile strikes on Kosovo, and the speech of Tony Blair came about a month after. But it was a big moment for him to give that speech, and it really did get the U.S. behind the whole, you know, call to arms and help out. So There is that.
And I think perhaps to talk of his yada yada-ing of Blair's importance, it seems as though Blair's big... It seems like there's a duality between what Blair's going through, both professionally and personally. And it seems as though he's personally attached to a genocidal war in Kosovo. And he's professionally... I will say
it was found by the UN. It was not an official genocide. It was not officially so.
A lot of people were dying, you know.
A lot of people dying.
That was sort of his personal thing to accomplish. And professionally, he's got the Queen asking him to clean up the image and read the books.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of a Peter Morgan way of being like, I love the Queen. She asked you to clean the books. All those dying people don't matter so much.
She's boss, or one of my bosses.
The one appointed by God.
That is true. And so, yeah, they need the image cleanup, and he's like, yeah, I can find some time to do that. And so, yeah, he talks to his wife about, you know, things that should be done to maybe clean up the royal image, to kind of freshen him up for modern times. And he comes back to her with a list.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, you know, are fair points. Like, you know, there's a current rule that demotes eldest daughters from being part of the succession line. And he's like, you know, you yourself would probably agree with that. And then he's also talking about marriage, of allowing the royalty to potentially marry outside of Catholicism faith to whoever they would like. She counters that would open up the royal line to non-Catholics, which would then destabilize the Church of England. The
sanctity of Church of England.
Yep. And then he has a laundry list of people that could be fired that don't serve any purpose, like the Warden of Swans.
Yeah. So I watched this episode yesterday, and the list of people, I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to remember this guy. And the only ones I remember is the Swan guy and the Falconer.
There's also the Barge Master, who, when they haven't had a barge since the 1800s. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she's saying, like, preservation of the monarchy is my life work, you know? So, like, come on, dude.
Yeah, and I feel like we've only been talking about this episode for a few minutes, but we've already gotten to, like, the crux of it. Like,
it's a very simple episode.
Yeah. So let's do a little rewind and talk about how the Queen is feeling these existential problems. And the episode is kind of bookended by speeches at the Women's Institute, where the Queen goes and basically makes a little cutesy speech, and not to discredit the Women's Institute, but, you know, it's a sort of puff piece for her to be like, the women are great. We all love women. You make so much of the world possible. Yeah.
A layup speech to people that will like her. Yeah.
And then she ends with saying, we're going to take all the jobs from the men. The women go nuts. Hooray. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so she is kind of in a position to be on the defensive, even though that she appears to be on the offense, you know?
Yeah.
She says, please give me advice. He gives her advice, and she's like kung fu swatting everything out of the air. Like, nope, nope, nope.
Yep. She is the queen.
But then, as we were talking about, this sort of menagerie of characters starts coming out, and she interviews them.
Mm-hmm. To understand more about their roles, which I think tells you enough that they're probably expendable if you don't even know what they do exactly and they work for you.
But then when you see what these people do, I think this did a really good job of making... Obviously, when Tony Blair says, we don't need the Swan Master, you're like, yeah, I agree. Fire him. But then when Queen Elizabeth goes and talks to the Swan Master and is walking around, and you see the lineage and the importance of the swans, and you see these century-old maps about the migrations of swans, you see that, like, this guy's not that different than, like, a park ranger. It's just very easy to slap a title on him and call him expendable, but what he's doing is sort of, like, wildlife conservation under the Queen's name. So you realize, like, yeah, a lot of this stuff is frivolous, but this guy has a job, and he's an expert, It's like if you went to and got a doctorate and got a great job with the government, and then the government's like, your job is stupid. It doesn't mean you're not intelligent and you're not worthwhile. So it brings into question whether or not the Swan Master is...
Well, we keep saying the Swan Master. I mean, it's the Swan Mark... Swan Warden is really the
correct I like name. Swan Master, but I would call him the Swan Master.
The title changed from Swan Master to Swan Keeper and then to Swan Marker. And then, yeah, it's Swan Warden. And, yeah, but I mean, it gets to the point what you're making, Dave. He's like the Game Warden. Mm-hmm. Except for swans exclusively. And yeah, all these people take great pride in their jobs. And it's funny because it takes up a few minutes of the episode, but it's probably the highlight of the episode is just seeing these kind of absurdly dressed people, but they really do take pride in their work. Mm-hmm. So.
And there's not, you know, I think when this scene happens where she's interviewing them, you get the image of when you see all these sort of people in these outfits coming in and the guy who organizes the glassware and folds the napkins, you think that these people might have an inkling that they're getting fired. But it seems as though there are all these giddy old men that are like, I can't wait to show you what I do. And then you see what they do and you say, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I actually maybe keep the job. But this episode jumps ahead too. It glaringly jumps ahead because all of a sudden he's talking about George W. Bush taking over as president. So we go from like early 1999 to the end of 2000. And so with that thing, the tide's already changing against Tony Blair because, well, A, we hear from the Queen that she's not going to fire anyone. She's going to preserve it because that's what makes the crown the crown. Sometimes keeping things the same is preserving, you know, our own reputation. And then B, he goes to talk to the Women's Institute. Like you said, they bookend this episode and he's giving a speech there and he talks a little bit too much about politics and they ain't having that. And so they start clapping and pretty much talking over him and booing him. And Tony Blair is all flustered. And yeah, he's not quite as hot as he once was. And we even heard this at the beginning of this episode that, you know, these prime ministers come in there in a blaze of glory, but then they always kind of lose their heat. Queen was doubtful, but sure enough, that's what's happening here. And as we know with history, Tony Blair does not stay hot forever over there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he goes back to see the Queen after he's been run out of the Women's Institute, and she's kind of just high on her high horse there.
Oh, yeah. Of course. She owns the Women's Institute. She's been a member since she was a teenager.
Yeah. She's like, told you so, Tony. And I kind of just blazed through it, but that is the episode, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, to talk a little bit more about some of the other stuff, there's... The discussion, Prince Charles believes that they should be a little bit more democratic in the royal family and the monarchy. And we come to the conclusion through all this stuff from the Queen's investigation that the magic is the answer. Like, if you went on a field trip or got invited to a royal dinner and there was, like, one dude working and the napkins were, like, from Costco, you wouldn't feel royal. But if you go in and she acknowledges that it's absurd, but she says it has to be transcendent to be good. So, you know, as much as I don't agree with the royal family in principle, I'm on Blair's side in a lot of ways. The way she lays it out, you're like, well, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. You know, it's got to be fantastical to be royal in and of itself, you know. The word has a connotation, an implication.
Yeah, Ruritania. Man, it still holds in her eyes because, yeah, it gives a certain allure. But, yeah, the only other oddball thing is they tell the queen at one point that she has to go see an insectoid robot named Maggie. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, I thought we were going to see the insectoid robot. Well, and I guess we're also skipping over the fact that Sleeper, great character, Robert Fellows.
Oh my God, we totally, yeah, sorry.
And this moment of being shaken up, and his sort of, he takes offense to this. He's having a little, you know, conversation by the water cooler with the boys. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, like, man, the fact that this is bugging me is really bugging me even more.
Yeah.
And he tells Queen Elizabeth, I think I got to hang it up. I'm just too old. Like, I don't have the gusto to do this anymore. This criticism is really getting to me. And right. She's like, no, stay. And then his successor then is the one that says, all right, we got this cool thing going. You're going to make a speech, and then you're going to go see a robot insect. You're going to go meet.
Would she have seen that robot in the past with this other, with Robert there?
Yes. Look, it's a diplomatic meeting with a robot insect named Megatron of the Decepticons. You need to go make peace so there's no war on Cybertron.
But, I mean, Robert does make the point, like, it was my fault that you're kind of falling out of step, you know? I'm not on top of things. But to me, it just read, like, this guy just really wants to retire. It's time.
Yeah, it's like someone opened up the door and he looked through it and he saw peace. He saw all our other, he saw Pip Torrens hanging out, you know, with his feet up. He saw all these other assistants that don't get named in this show. What's his name? Birdie from Downton Abbey. All these guys that come and go. And he says, you know what? Time to go out to the the Rainbow Bridge of being a retired government official.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's this week on The Crown. It's pretty forgettable episode, I have to say, Dave.
it had some brief moments of, I would say it had some human moments. Meeting the quirks and the oddballs is nice. But I see why people are criticizing this back half of the season.
We've gotten this episode too before in The Crown of, like, is The Crown out of touch? And the answer for the 50 years that this show covers, or plus 50 years plus, is that yes, they have been out of touch the entire time. Like, you think back to the episode where they're trying to do a documentary at their house to show how, you know, relatable they are. It just has come up time after time. And here it's just like kind of the show, like the prime minister weaponizing that against her. But, like, whatever. I mean, we know just from the long view of history, this was just a shakeup that led to nothing. Tony Blair had a moment, but
he was hot for a sec.
Yeah, and the biggest thing that he did was, you know, not the biggest thing, but, like, if in the storyline of the show was helping with, like, hey, Diana should have this funeral, and being a voice of reason on that. So, like, there's the relevance to what we're watching here, I think. We do also get them, of course, a moment this episode of Prince Charles isn't that bad. He's the one saying, like, oh, no, these polls, we should listen to him, or we should listen to Tony Blair. It's like, come on, Charles is not that reasonable. Like, let's be real.
No.
He's stodgy. Yeah.
Dominic West happens. Charles is.
Exactly. The strange thing, too, is The Crown has gotten more flexible with their episodes not being a full hour. So if this episode that we just saw had been aired back in 2016, it would have been a full hour because every Crown episode was a full hour. But the strange thing to me is that they haven't let go of the 10-episode structure of the series, that every season has to be 10 episodes, regardless if it's things that need to be covered. And I think this is one that maybe they could have just let slip by.
Well, when you talk about Blair and his relationship to Peter Morgan, maybe Peter Morgan knew he had to do a Blair episode, but he needed an in that he had never covered before. So this moment in history might have been one of the only stones he had left unturned.
Well, if that's the case, he didn't have much to say.
Yeah. Especially, in You could have just used the script for one of your many side projects about Tony Blair and just taken that.
I mean, he probably did. There was a couple co-writers to this episode, but yeah. So, anyways, that
or
was
or bring Bush into it. Make Bush, and, you know, like a last act, less care. You know, bring in Josh Brolin and playing him. It'll be a good time.
Oh yeah, just bring Bush himself to play himself.
He'd do it. He's making paintings in Disney World now. So yeah.
Why not? Well, we got power rankings, though.
We do.
And I'll kick it off.
Go for it.
Number 3 going down, it's The Crown. The polls don't lie. Okay. They're not looking too hot right now. Only 10% approve of them. So, bad news for the crown.
That's fair. Well, I got Tony Blair at number three going down because...
Oh, okay.
You know, he starts the episode hot. Mm-hmm. He eventually gets the people on his side in the Kosovo War. But by the end of the episode, the queen has rejected all of his ideas. And he is living a living version of history repeating itself. That,
yeah,
you know,
okay,
he's hot for a minute, but he's not a minute later. So,
all right. Well, at number two going down, I got Queen Elizabeth.
Okay.
Because again, even if she comes out on top of Tony Blair, she's not in favor. Like, people, she hasn't done enough to change her reputation. And as we saw over the past 25 years, like, her reputation continued to kind of just erode into irrelevance, aside from being like a kind of like, you know, point of like, oh, hey, look, they still got royalty there. You know, like, it's really a sign of the times that she doesn't hold the sway that she used to, aside from being able to say, like, we're not changing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, who do you... Oh, well, now my turn. Number two going down.
Okay.
I got the Kosovo Liberation Army.
Okay.
They eventually got the help they needed to win, but they lost a lot of lives leading up to that. And I feel weird ranking somebody else above them.
Yeah, but I wasn't going there.
This is a fictionalized, tweaked version of history that speeds over a lot of the real sad reality of the war. This episode didn't have a lot of characters. I had to do something.
Yeah.
I went real.
Well, number one going down, I got the royal staff. Like, what are these people doing here? Like, I know they take a lot of pride in their work, and
they're going down. You know,
yeah, these people are jokes, man. Are you kidding me? Like, they should have been fired. I'm sorry. Like,
that's crazy.
I like them all, but like, no. This is ridiculous that there's a swan warden getting paid on people's taxes. Like,
so how is that bad? How is that negative? He's there. Probably still is one. If he was unemployed, then I would say
this is my vote of disapproval as an American.
You're politicizing it here.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Well, you know, if we're talking about true down rankings, who has the worst week? It's Robert Fellows. This guy stares at his job and stares at his mistakes, his perceived mistakes, and quits on one of the most, you know, being in the ear of one of the most important figures in the world. So, thanks for coming, Robert. Yeah. I think you might have ranked once or twice on our rankings before, but you're definitely an underrated character in this last run.
Yeah. They're so anonymous, some of these helpers, it's hard to remember their names.
This whole episode is anonymous, people. It's tough. Yeah.
Well, Dave, who's going up?
Going up at number three, I got the Women's Institute.
Okay.
They think, you're making us a puff piece. The queen comes in and has a little chit-chat talking about how important women are. They're loving it. They say, this is us. Mm-hmm. We love the world. We love women. We love women doing great things. Clap, clap, clap. Tony Blair comes in, starts talking politics. They say, nah. Not in our house.
Yeah.
So they're out. Or he's out. Good for them.
Well, by that same measure, I have the UK going up. It was the 90s internet boom. Tony Blair was winning people over, kissing babies. And he got the UK looking good by being this big supporter for Kosovo. It was a good time to be in the UK, otherwise, you know, in terms of how they were looked at as a world power.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's not hard to disagree there. But speaking of the kingdom, I got Queen Elizabeth at number two. Because I think that this is a week where, as much as we might disagree with the mission statement of the show a lot of times, this show is about the crown. And Queen Elizabeth has this existential dread about being pointless. And she sticks to her guns, and the crown didn't change, you know? And I think when she talks about the mystery and the transcendence of it all, it kind of got me, you know? It has to be magical. The crown has to be magical.
I guess, yeah. I mean, as we see every episode, that magical opening of the crown being created, you know?
You mean skip intro is what I call that.
Yes, that. Well, I have Robert at number two. going up, because the guy retired with dignity. He wasn't put out like of his misery. This is a guy who chose his own way out, and he was like, I'm just gonna go, you know, live my own best life. See ya. And I appreciated that. You know, he didn't make a fool of himself, I don't think.
All right.
Even if he thought he did.
Well, I'll throw the power rankings into a hijinks, because I got the oddballs at number one. I got Swan Master, okay, and the napkin folder, because I think ultimately these are people. These are people working jobs that are collecting paychecks, doing very specific jobs. And in a world where Tony Blair could have used his influence to get them fired and get them terminated, and they would have had nothing else to do with their very specific set of skills, they don't.
Yeah.
So, and their scenes are the best scenes. They're the highlight of the episode, these weirdos.
Well, I would say everything is that's down for you is up for me, because Tony Blair's at number one. This guy is running the show, man. He gets the world on his shoulders to save Kosovo. He's, again, holding court with the Queen, because even if she doesn't actually follow all his advice that he makes, she gives him the time of day to listen to him, you know, which is, and actively take in his suggestions, which she doesn't give to many of her prime ministers. So he's breathing rarefied air. And this is also outside the realm of the show, but I was reading how the crown a little over embellished the reaction of the women to him being flustered there. Like, he wasn't that much of a hot mess after that. They really made it look much worse than it was. But at the same time, like, he didn't end his run until 2007, so it wasn't like the end of the road right there for him. So Tony Blair, man, he had some power, and he tried to use it.
He used it effectively for a while.
Yeah.
You just got to keep that juice forever. It's tough.
Yeah. But that's this week on The Crown. I hope next week we got more to chew on, but it looks like it's another 48-minute episode, and the 49 minutes, and the score is the same as this one on IMDb from the users at 7.4. So.
Oh, I just read the one sentence synopsis. So I think it'll be an interesting one. Let's not spoil it for people that are, if there are people watching slowly in real time with us.
I feel like if we had, future look ahead vision on this show, we should have just done this back to back with the next episode, maybe.
Hey. Well, how many? What do you have? What, four left?
We have four left, and we're gonna milk them for all they're worth.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if this is a very busy month for me. I would definitely be down to knock out 2 hours of TV a week going, but
nah. Okay, we could do that.
No, I'm saying this is busy. Like, I can't squeeze in an extra hour of TV on a Monday afternoon to watch this.
Okay.
Before we record. So, right. I mean, if that's something, and also like if you're still listening to this podcast, you've made it through our whole episode in our power rankings, and you think the idea of doubling up to burn through like Bridgerton faster is something that excites you and interests you, let us know, because once, you know, I'm just saying the month of May is wild for me. So the summer is a little calmer. So then maybe I might be totally game to do double Bridgerton episodes to catch up.
Dave says, bring the smoke. With his scheduling.
I love fan interaction. Just hell, you know, if you have an opinion, let us know. Also, Bridgerton is inescapable right now. They have a clothing line at Target. Like, it's obscene.
It's been in the air. They're really working overtime to sell it again to people as, like, you got to watch it. You got to tune in.
Shonda.
What are you doing? Well, Dave, you been watching anything else?
Well, you know, speaking of The Crown, and speaking of this past weekend, you know, it's a unofficial holiday. Well, I mean, Cinco de Mayo was Sunday, but Saturday it's a little nerdy holiday where Star Wars fans say May the 4th be with you. I think some of us lifelong Star Wars fan might kind of go every time we hear that, especially when
it didn't used to be a thing.
It
was not a thing for kids. Come on.
But you know, speaking of Target slapping branding on things, May the 4th nonsense is everywhere. But I've gotten to that old age where I just try not to care. And in the true Star Wars fashion, they re-released the Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, for its 25th anniversary in theaters. And I went and made a trip to the theater to watch a movie that had a lot of importance to me as a boy.
As myself.
Speaking of The Crown, in this time period, there should have been an episode one scene in this episode.
Yeah.
We cover the time period. What did the Queen think of Star Wars coming back? But I will say,
I'm sure they enjoyed it. They like pop culture over there.
I don't know how this movie captured the hearts and the minds of children. It's a bad movie. And I love so much about it. But I think it's the most complicated movie I've ever seen in my life. I don't know what the point of the plot of the movie is. There's trade disputes, and then a political coup goes on in the Senate.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, there's a slave boy who is immaculately conceived, and we just dust that under the rug in one scene.
Don't they eventually reveal that it's all just kind of a distraction from the growing Sith powers that are going on in the background, man?
You're which not is even crazier. But then, you know, this is me. Now I'll put my Star Wars nerd hat on.
Okay.
Last Jedi comes out in whatever 2017 or whenever that one comes out. And there's the whole subplot of that movie where it's basically war is pointless. There's no reason that we should be doing this. And people complained about it. People said it was a waste of time. All of episode one is a waste of time. It is infinitely watchable. It's stupid, but I laughed. I had a good time. I hate myself for it. It's very racist. But
yeah, it is. It's like shocking how racist that movie is and prejudice. Just really embracing those stereotypes. I haven't watched it recently, but the pod racing scene, I think, actually might be the best scene in the movie. And like, because as good as the Darth Maul, Qui-Gon, and Obi-Wan fight is, it's broken up with the Gungans fighting the droids, Anakin and
getting around the palace.
But like those 5 minutes of just the pod racing, and you just hear the wobble of that engine going.
It's like Star Wars. There's creatures. There's new characters.
Yeah.
There's, you know, excitement and tension, and it's fun. Yeah, pod racing is great. It is this easy movie to sit and watch and enjoy, but you feel a little dirty as an adult in our modern society that this millionaire man was like, oh, I'm gonna make like five broadly racist characters that just wander around my movie.
Someone said it best today, actually, that you learn more or you understand Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Darth Maul more from the final fight than anything else in the movie, where, you know, the grid of lasers come up, and then you see Obi-Wan, he's like antsy, he's the young one ready to go, Qui-Gon's meditating, and Darth Maul's just prowling. And that's like, oh, you learn more about who they are just from that moment than the 2 hours preceding it.
And it's also the way that, and we're rambling, but we did go short on The Crown, so I think we were allowed to ramble a little bit.
Plenty of time.
as kids, we dissected every frame of this movie, and I had the action figures and the video games and the T-shirts of all these things, and then they're on screen for like 5 seconds, and I could tell you this character's name, I can tell you their job, I can tell you what they do, like what their personality is, but if you're like, I can imagine, I'm glad my dad did not go to the movie theater to see this with me and my brother, because he would have been like, this is the worst. Who is this guy?
Yeah.
But we loved it.
Three times in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, too, as an adult, like as a kid, you're just like, oh, Queen Amidala's okay and everything. But maybe it's because it's rubbing off on me, us watching all these period dramas. But her gowns and dresses in that movie are incredible.
Well, the fashion, there's a lot of very eye-popping things about it.
Yeah. How about Dominic West in it, Dave?
That's right. Dominic West, Prince Charles, he has one line, and he's great. He has to act opposite Jake Lloyd. He says, Queen Amidala, Anakin Skywalker's here to see you. And she's like, yeah, let me talk to a boy, a 9-year-old.
Yep. But yeah, those dresses, though.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Definitely hold up. What about you, Corey? You watch anything in your travels?
No.
That's good.
Not much. I did watch a little bit because I was hanging with our childhood friend Justin, and we had rented an Airbnb, and so he was like, is there anything funny we can watch? And I was like, have you ever watched the show Pen 15? And then put on an episode, and we watched the second episode. And the next day, he's like, do you want to keep watching that? And so we watched a couple episodes in the morning. We watched a couple episodes in the evening. The next day, we watched another couple episodes. We watched a season and a half of the show.
Wow, okay.
The 3 or 4 days we were hanging out. It was not planned. It just was like we were drinking, and it was just very easy to watch.
It's I've only watched a few episodes, but it is infinitely just like relevant. It's in that same sort of Star Wars where it's like this all feels familiar.
Yeah, because it takes place in when we went to middle school. They're in middle school in 2000, 2001, and they're drinking cans of Surge in like multiple episodes.
It's a dream come true.
Just, yeah, it punches all the buttons. But aside from that, just been traveling, living my best life. All
right. Any Vegas recommendations that you can talk about on air?
Yeah, there's some stuff I can't talk about on air. Yeah, I mean, we did like the VIP pool life for an afternoon, which is pretty dope. Just getting drinks brought to your tent, and you can just go take a swim, come back, just lie out on a big old couch and stuff.
Any famous DJs playing? Well, you do that?
No famous DJs playing. No. But it was like, I put money down on the horses, and it's like, I can sit in the pool and watch from a TV the horse race and not even worry about the money. I'm in a pool right now. It's pretty nice.
It's a horse race.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you...
And riding ATVs around the desert. Incredible. I absolutely recommend to anyone, if they get the opportunity, go get an ATV, a Humvee or whatever. Not a Humvee, ATV. Just a quad, and drive it around the desert. It's so much fun.
Do you feel like Call of Duty on that thing in the desert?
A little bit. At first, I was nervous because, like, you know, I don't ride bicycles and stuff, so like you're not protected and you're just driving this thing around. But by the end, I was standing up on the thing.
Oh yeah.
And I was going like 35 miles an hour. The wind's just hitting you, and yeah, it's like, yeah, where's my my guns akimbo to do some Call of Duty stuff?
Next time.
Yeah, recommend that. And it was a good time. It was a good time. And I am exhausted.
Mm-hmm. So well, if you're exhausted, let's call it a day on this episode.
Yeah, Raritania, y'all. And if you want to hear more of our episodes, you can find us on Spotify and iTunes. Leave us 5-star rating review if so choose. You can also find our episodes on our Podbean website. You can also join our Patreon, as Dave has referenced, and be part of our Lords of Grantham Lounge. You can also hit us up at lordsgrantham@gmail.com if you need to talk to us about anything. And we're also on Facebook, Twitter, X, and Instagram. And we'll catch you next time on the pod.